Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing in life because, and now this is the truth, everybody, what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Life's a creative experience. God knows writing is. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as some video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Speaking of genres, we've got a new issue up with a conversation I had with Kandara Blake, a wonderful young adult author, had a lot of great things to say about, I think I actually mentioned her in the last conversation, last Fearless Writing class we had. Anyway, we talked about finding time to write and her connection to writing and how much she loves it, and she was just awesome. So glad to meet her, and our conversation is up on authormagazine.org. We are also funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, go to pnwa.org. Well, I want to get right to it. Today is another Fearless Writing Masterclass. And as you know, the way it works is we put out the question to you. What stands between the writing experience you're having now and the writing experience you want to have? What is standing? Is it time? Is it talent? Is it intelligence? Is it self-consciousness? Do you not have an agent? What is it? We put that question out there. And actually, I didn't really put that question out. My co-host, the fabulous A.C. Fuller, he put it out there. And A.C. is with me now today. A.C., how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on. And I've got some questions from the Writer 2.0 Facebook group for you.
Yes, Writer 2.0, if you're on Facebook, and I know you all are. Is it anyone can join? Is that true, A.C.?
Yep, anyone can join. It's just a small community of writers and some agents, both traditionally published and self-published writers and some aspiring authors who talk about writing both the craft and the business.
Beautiful. And AC, this is a vibrant community. AC attends to it, and they have provided a lot of fabulous questions. I recommend you all check out Writer 2.0, and that is also the name of AC's fantastic podcast, where he interviews authors of all shapes and sizes, including me once upon a time. So they can find that at your website or just on through iTunes or the normal podcasting outlets.
Yep, all the normal podcasting outlets and also on my website, acfuller.com.
Excellent. Okay. So the question, as I mentioned, was what stands between you and the writing experience you want to have? Now, AC has got the questions that he's corralled from all the writers out there. But if you want to call in, you can do so at 661-449-9357. That's 661-449-9357. If you do, you will come right to the head of the class and we'll take your question. But I'm going to tell you now that in a way, all the answers are the same. All the answers that I'm going to give today are based on essentially two central ideas that are linked. They're really one idea, but they come out in two forms. One is everybody's got what it takes. You are all talented enough, smart enough, creative enough to write anything you want. Everybody is equal in that regard. Not everybody's awareness of it is equal, but everybody is inherently equally talented, intelligent, creative, etc. So everybody's got what it takes. And second, the central habit writers fall into that is really the source of all their fear is the idea that they have to be concerned about what other people think of their work. As soon as we let our attention stray to the idea of what do other people think of what I'm writing, we leave the seat of all our confidence, all our creativity, all our intelligence. We leave it in search of other people's validation, other people's opinion. And so most of the work I do is to help writers bring their attention back to themselves, back to their inherent confidence, their inherent creativity, where they do not need to worry about what other people think, even though they want to share their work with other people. So those are the two fundamental ideas. And AC, what do you got for me? What kind of questions do we have today?
Well, it's good timing because you mentioned this in the intro. This is a question from Lee Tucker, who asked it in the Writer 2.0 Facebook group. He says that the biggest thing keeping him from the experience he wants to have is finding an agent or publisher to take on my work. So I'll be interested to see what you have to say about that.
Well, of course, you know, the mechanics of finding an agent and publisher are pretty simple, right, AC? You go to a writer's conference and meet with an agent and tell them what pitch your work to them, and they tell you if they're interested, and if so, you send them the You send them the chapters, and if they like it, they represent you, and then they try to find the right publisher who will publish it. It's not, or you can go online and research different agents, and they will tell you what they represent, and you send them a query letter, and they telling what your book's about, and if they're interested, they ask for chapters, and so on and so forth. This is how to find agents on a mechanical, step-by-step basis is not that complicated. It's simply letting people know what you have and seeing if they're interested. However, I don't think that's what your friend is referring to.
Probably not.
It's not.
I think this is great for your topic because it's for many people, it's difficult to not worry about what other people think of our writing when we're going through the process of finding an agent or publisher, and in most of our cases, collecting lots of rejections, some with suggestions for change. And so I know that process for a lot of people can be difficult, crippling, can send them down a rabbit hole of negativity, etc.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I said, your number one job is to keep your eyes on your own page. Keep your attention on what you know for sure, which is your belief in the value of the story you've told. You believe your story is valuable. That's why you wrote it. You wouldn't have bothered spending all the time you did writing it if you didn't think the story held some value, whether that value is in a romance story about the finding of true love or in a suspense story of finding courage and overcoming evil or violence, whether it's a coming-of-age story, whether it's a fantasy novel, the struggle of good versus evil. It doesn't matter. Whatever you believe that inherent value of the story is, that's what attracted you to that story, and that's what led you to tell it, and that's what led you to share it. But there is no act that a writer can engage in that will more likely compel them to wonder what other people think than saying to someone, will you represent this? Will you buy it? The very act seems to be saying, what do you think of it? And that very act of approaching agents and editors almost always pulls us out of ourselves and into that nether region of what do other people think of it. A nether region, by the way, which would lead us to think that other people's value of our work or opinion of our work is more valuable than ours. In other words, we write the story and we think it's awesome, but if somebody comes along and says, I don't think it's awesome, suddenly we can no longer trust this thing that led us to tell the story, this thing that said, I think it's interesting, which is your guidance towards the story that you want to write and how you're going to write it. No, suddenly somebody comes along and says, I don't like it, and suddenly you can't trust yourself and all your confidence and all your interest is gone. Does this sound familiar, AC?
Because
someone else
familiar to me, and
okay.
I know to many people listening, maybe all people listening.
Of course, it is like physics. The moment you say, I love this story, but maybe it doesn't matter that I love this story. It only matters what other people love it or not. And so, first of all, remember that your goal is to rest within your unconditional love for the story, by which I mean you loved that story because you loved it. You were interested in it because you were interested in it, not because other people were going to buy it, not because it was going to win you an award, not because it was going to get a contract. All that might happen, but you were interested in it simply because you were interested in it. It had no other – there was nothing more to it than that. That's what drew you to it, your inherent unconditional interest in it. But then you go to the act of trying to share it with other people. So what do you do? How do you keep yourself from freaking out, and how do you go about this process with finding the right person and doing it in a way that isn't miserable? Well, I learned this, I think, for the first time when I began – pitching an agent for the first time at conferences. Have you ever done the live pitching, AC?
I have, yeah.
Okay. So I sat there and I'm pretty good one-on-one with people. A lot of writers aren't. I know they're more introverted, but I am a bit of a showman, so it doesn't bother me. I'm in fact often more comfortable with that than when I was writing query letters. But I realized that when I sat down with an agent to pitch it, what I would do was think about the story and how awesome I thought it was. And I would rest my attention in that the same way I would rest my attention in it while I was writing it. In other words, when you're writing your story, you've got to remember what's so awesome about it or else you can't write it. Why that story is worth being told is where your attention has to go, and it's within you in order to tell it. And I realized the best way to talk to someone was to think about how much I love the story and talk from that place of knowing how awesome it was and not let my mind drift into their minds. And when I talked in that way about it, I had there were two things that happened. One, I felt way more, I was back in my confidence. And my confidence is my awareness that I'm interested in things simply because I'm interested in them, not because of what other people think of them, and not because of where it's going to go. I spoke from just my inherent interest in the piece. And so first of all, I felt better. I felt more confident. I felt like myself. I felt like a writer again. I felt like a creative person again. I was back in contact with my confidence. So that was the first and most lovely benefit. And the second was, I am always most compelling and attractive to people like agents when I am speaking from that confidence. Insecurity would be me talking to try to convince them, try to sell them, to try to get into their heads. But when I'm speaking from my inherent confidence, I give them the best chance to see the attractiveness of that story and for them to have the best chance of knowing if it's the right story for them. And so I tended to get a lot of people wanting to read my chapters and so on. And when I learned to apply that same approach to writing query letters, in other words, I'm not going to write the query letters to try to figure out how to write it to get people to like it, to get people to want it. Instead, I'm going to write the query letter in the same way I wrote the novel that the query letter is based on. I'm going to think about the novel, think how cool it is, think how much I love it, or the memoir or whatever it is, think how much I love it, and write a letter that represents my interest in that story. And if you do that, you stay connected to the thing you actually know, which is how much you love the story. You stay rooted in the thing you actually can return to and are certain about. You will never know what other people think. You can never know whether someone is the right agent. But if you approach people from the place of knowing how awesome it is, and again, you don't be shy. You wrote it because you think it's awesome. Allow yourself that much. If you write from that place, you give them
really
the best chance to know.
Because I know a lot of people switch into like boring business mode when they have to write query letters and synopses.
Don't do it.
And I think your advice is really good to stay in the passion of the story. I've heard that from agents too.
Because it's all you know. You don't know what they want. You don't know. You don't know. And by the way, they don't know until they see it. And don't worry about the market, really. Don't worry about – because if you've written a story that you love and you've written it the way you absolutely want to write it, there is a market for it somewhere. It's just that human beings are too alike for there not to be. And so the real question, I think, that why this comes up again and again is because the act of querying agents and finding publishers is such – it is so tempting when doing this to leave ourselves and to believe that what other people think of us is more important than what we think of us. What other people think of our story is more important than what we think of our story. But the thing to remember, and I would say to Lee, that all those agents and publishers out there, they are looking for things that they love. They want to find stories that they love. They want to be excited. I'm an editor too. I want stories to come across my desk for my magazine that I love. I'm disappointed when I don't love them. It's not that they're bad stories, but I want to publish stuff that I love. So I'm always looking, and looking for it. I know what I want. I know what those stories are like. And I'm waiting for the stuff I love to come across my desk. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And so just as if you wrote something you love, know that out there somewhere, publishing your book is a dream. Publishing your book is a big dream. It's a beautiful dream. But know this, that somewhere out there are agents and editors for whom your story is the fulfillment of their dream. They too have dreams of being involved, and maybe they aren't writers themselves, but they would love to bring beautiful books into the world. They would love to make money bringing these books into the world and sharing with people. That's their dream. But in order to have that dream, they need you. And so even though you need them to fulfill your dream, they need you to fulfill their dreams. And so you come together, and the dream of both of you is fulfilled. So stay with what you know. Stay with how much you love it, and let that knowing guide you out into the world of publishers and agents. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's very good advice. I'm definitely going to refer back to that next time I'm in that mode.
Remember, when you're doing it.
This is from Greg. The question was about self-confidence and disliking your own work. And a lot of your last answer was about you love the book, you wrote the book, you love the story you wrote. So his question was, what about the times when I oscillate back and forth between loving and hating my own book, when I'm halfway through and think it's a dumb idea and hate it for a week and don't want to work on it, and then I love it again,
well,
and then I hate it again. That kind of back and forth that I know a lot of writers feel, where they're questioning themselves along the way, and that then stymies their progress.
I think that it's very normal to lose the thread of your story and lose your awareness of what drew you to it. But you don't want to mistake that for actually hating the idea. It is more likely that you are having trouble finding the thread of it again. You are having trouble because you really, because remember, when I'm writing a story, even if I don't write fiction anymore, but even if I'm telling my own story, I still have to keep finding that story again and again because it's from my past. And know that every time you sit down to write, you have to find it again as if it's for the first time. So that very act requires a trust, because where you live your life and where the story is are not the same place. So you have to allow that every time you sit down to write, you have to find it anew. And sometimes the story needs to take a kind of new direction, and you don't yet know what that is. And I think that we hate that story when we do one of two things. We begin to tell it in a way that we don't actually want to tell it, but we are telling it in a way that we think will please other people. And you will soon hate it, because you are beginning to contort yourself into an uncomfortable position. You are starting to
hate what it's become in that moment of contortion.
That's right, because we are rejecting ourselves. At that moment, you reject yourself. So that's one way that it's very uncomfortable. That as soon as you begin to write it in some way that you think it's supposed to be written, and it can be the smallest thing, AC, it doesn't take much. It can just be that you think you want to write a very short book, but you think it needs to be long, or you think I need to write a suspense book and the sentences need to be short and crisp. I can't write longer, more sort of poetic sentences. Whatever you think the outside world wants your book to be, if you just alter it ever so slightly based on what you think other people think it should be, you are going to begin to hate it because you've rejected yourself. So that's one way. And the other way is you write the thing and you do actually like it, but you begin to look at it from the outside in, as if you're trying to be the eyes of some other reader that doesn't exist but does in your imagination. And in that process, it's very easy to look at anything. I don't care if it's Ulysses or Hemingway or Shakespeare. You can look at anything and think it sucks. You can look at anything from any angle, every time you write, you make a choice. You go left instead of right. You go up instead of down. And every time you went up instead of down, you can look at it and think, wouldn't it be better if I went down? Wouldn't it have been better if I went right instead of left? And so that's the other reason we hate it, because we're looking at it from the outside in, what we think other people will think of it, and invariably when we do that, we see it in a way and think, this will please nobody, no one will find this interesting. And so I think those are the two primary reasons that we judge the work and we think we hate it. The key at those moments is to think about. And I would say to your listeners, when I teach writing, one of the things I talk about is the intentional arc of a story. Well, we do have a caller. We'll see if we can get to them. The intentional arc of a story. And the intentional arc of the story is why you're telling it. And usually the intentional arc of a story is the difference between one thing and another. The difference between feeling weak and feeling strong. The difference between feeling like you have no voice and the feeling like you do have a voice. The difference between knowing love matters and thinking it doesn't matter. Return to that knowing, because usually that's what a story is based on, and let that be your guide for let that be the thread you're returning to. Does that make sense?
I think that's excellent advice and really answers the question.
All right, we have a caller. Let's see see what this caller has to say, shall we, AC?
Yep.
Hello, caller, you're live. Did you have a question for us?
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I was wondering, I haven't started writing per se, but I was told that when you do write, in order to begin, that you should just start writing and not worry about what you're writing or correcting your writing. And I've tried that too, and that I can't I need to get out of that mode of wanting to go back and correct it. So
yes.
How do you
and
how
so
do
what's
you
your name?
Switch your brain off. Suzette.
Okay, Suzette. So you want to start writing. Now, is there something, a type of writing you're interested in, like poetry or fiction, or is it just you don't know what it is? You just want to put words on the page?
Well, actually, I have a story of despair and triumph, personal.
Excellent.
That I'd like to
okay,
put down.
So here's what I would say to you. Here's what I would say to you, Suzette. You already remember, if you just were listening to my last answer, I talked about what's called the intentional arc. And the intentional arc is the difference between one thing and another. And you intuitively, brilliantly, already said, I have a story about despair and triumph. So I want you to first, when you sit down to write, think about how it feels to despair and how it feels to triumph. Have you experienced both those things?
Yes.
Okay. Would you ever choose despair over triumph? Could I talk you into that, saying, why don't you despair today instead of being triumphant?
Yeah.
You would choose one over the other?
Because you can't feel one without the other.
It's different. You're anticipating. You're saying, I value the despair because it taught me the power of triumph. But would you ever wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to despair today? Today I'm going to be depressed. Having actually experienced depression.
Yes.
Of course you would.
Yes.
Nobody would, but that's okay. Your despair teaches you the value of triumph. So when you think about this story that you're writing, the first thing I want you to think about is the difference between despair and triumph, the value of triumph, how you learned about triumph through your despair. Okay?
Okay.
So that is your grounding. That's why you're sitting down to write. Focus on that feeling, because no one can talk you out of it. And then, yes, I want you, if possible, if you're new to this writing game and you're tempted to go back and correct and correct and correct, try writing a first draft without ever going back over it, ever looking back at it. Because you have got the problem with writing and going back and rewriting, Suzette, is a lot of what you're doing is you're worrying about what other people are going to think of it. And you've got to kind of write yourself out of that. So try writing a whole draft of the story, and it can be horrible. It can be boring. It can ramble. It doesn't matter. You've got to let yourself just write it without ever worrying if it's any good or not, just letting it come through initially and then worry about the editing later. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
because I'll tell you, it takes some practice to learn to look at your work and I'm not going to say improve it, but tighten it and focus it without becoming self-conscious and thinking about what other people will think of it. That does take practice. So first, let's just get into the practice of putting words onto the page without worrying about what other people will think of it.
Okay. Well, I spent
10 years starting and stopping and never finishing anything, and finally I realized what Bill said is the way I had to do it to really finish a book, and I had to go and write a whole 110,000-word book without really going back at all, just start to finish. It took 5 months, and then I had to edit it many, many times, but I never would have finished it if I didn't just decide on plowing forward without looking back. That worked for me.
And by the way, Suzette, you will never be more creative, more attuned to your sort of inherent intelligence, never more surprised by what you've written than when you finally sink into the dream of whatever you're writing about and forget, and just forget to care what other people think of what you think is interesting. You have to teach yourself to care what other people think. We all do it. We've all done it. We're all brilliant at it. But the truth is, at your core, what you actually are, what you were born, is someone who doesn't care what other people think of their work. Yes, you want to share it because you share everything that you love, but your connection to the thing, this story you want to tell, has nothing, nothing to do with other people except that you want to share it the way you want to share everything that you love. Does that make sense?
Actually, I wasn't interested in having it published or anything. It was something I just wanted to write for myself. So.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. However, that's fine. However, know that. So that's good. Don't think about that. But when you're finished, then you call us back and we'll see about that. But you're right. Okay, fine. First, just write it. That's very good. Don't think about publishing it. That's wonderful. But if you do finish it and you love it, you may want to share it. What do you think?
I don't know. I want to do this because there, I know, for personally, I will feel better afterwards because I need to get it out. I wasn't interested in sharing it, but I just wanted to know how to begin. Because, so that's what you helped me with today.
That's good. So. And sometimes the only time, and as you're writing it, Suzanne, know that you don't have to think, that's fine, don't think about publishing it, but understand, how could someone else who hasn't lived your experience, how could you teach them what you learned? Because that's sort of what you're teaching them. Someone who hasn't walked in your shoes. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
Good luck. And
Thank you very much.
I'm going to be doing more of these. So if you want, you can call back and we'll, and you can ask more questions.
Good luck.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Well, AC, do we, it's, we have time
for
one
more quick one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so this is from Laura Kemp. She's not able to call in, but she said, what is the best thing a writer's group can do for increasing the productivity of its members? And I get questions about writing groups a lot, and I thought I'd throw it out there as a general topic for you, because some people are afraid to join them, and I've heard from other people that they join them and then spend their whole time kind of chatting and never really writing, and they become more of a social thing for other people. And for I know other people for whom they're hugely beneficial, too. So I thought maybe you could say a few words about writing
groups.
Well,
first of all, decide if you want it to be a social thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a social writing group. Writers, God knows, they need to talk to each other. And so if you want to do that, do it. I think it's great. I wouldn't mind having one of those. I don't, you know. I have friends. I have a wife, and she's a writer, so that's my writer's group.
Maybe we should start one.
Maybe I should, because I do like – I'm afraid I would just start teaching and take over, and it would be no good. But I do think it is – I do think it's very useful. But if you want a writing group where you actually go through work and workshop pieces, I would say – first of all, make sure you pick people who are working on a project, actually working on something, not people who are hoping to start something because they're hoping to join a writer's group to get them to start something. I don't think that'll work. I think it's best to find people who are in the process of writing projects, whether it's short stories or novels. And then I would say after you do that, so you got to be selective, you want to create a workshop environment that is as friendly as possible. And I think that the way to do that is as follows. After you read the work, have each person talk about what they really like about it first, because I think as a writer, it helps me, not as a writer reading other people's work, it is useful for me to talk about what I think works, because it teaches me what I am interested in and what can be done to be effective in writing. So it both helps encourage the writer and also teaches me how to think about writing in a different way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so that's the first thing you do. And the second thing is you do, I would say, only talk about what you don't understand in the work, what doesn't make sense to you, what is unclear. I don't understand why the person is upset here. I don't understand, this seems slow to me, which is another way of saying you seem to think, you, the writer, seem to think it's interesting. I can't feel the tension in this scene. So I would only talk about what is present and not present. I don't find this funny. I don't find this scary. I think that, you know, I don't understand the character's motivation here. Because, and avoid at all possible costs recommending solutions. I do not think that is someone else's business. Even editors, as an editor, I don't recommend solutions. I ask a lot of questions. Why is this and why is that? Why is this here and why is that there? Why isn't this explained better and why is it? I don't try to recommend solutions because the solutions are in the writer. But the reader can say what they don't understand. That's an absolutely honest response, and the writer can decide if they can help them understand better. I think if you do those two things, the writing experience it'll be the friendliest and most inviting experience for the writers. But really avoid recommending corrections, recommending ideas.
I think that's a great suggestion and probably should be the ground rule number one of Laura's writing group if she's starting one or is already in one.
Yeah, I really think so. That's what I do in my classes when I workshop. I might give certain assignments to my writers and say, I would like to see you handle these situations, but I try to stay away from correcting the piece in that way.
I remember, I think it's in Stephen King's writing book on writing, he says something like, if a bunch of people tell you that this particular scene is too slow or isn't working, they're probably right, but if they tell you exactly how to fix it, they're probably wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that speaks to what
and
you
I
were
have
just
other
saying.
Stories yeah. about that where that's and I it's too long to tell now. But I think he's absolutely right. If nobody gets the joke it probably need to rewrite the joke. But or, you know, or the scene or whatever it is. But they can't tell you how to fix it. That's up to you because it's in you. People, we have
good
to
advice.
Go. It's 2:30. Everyone say goodbye to AC. He's got to go run and pick up his child because he's a good father. And so
yep, my 5-year-old son needs to be picked up. So, Bill, it's great talking to you. Let's do it again soon.
Oh, we're going to do it again, everybody. All right, AC, take it easy. And then for the rest of you, I want to thank my producer who's been online keeping an eye on everything, the incomparable RJ Jeffries. And, well, I'm going to be talking next week. Let's see. Next week I am talking to, I believe, on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. Yes, I'm going to be – oh, actually nothing. Next week is Election Day, boys and girls. I'm taking Election Day off. Get out there and vote. On the 15th, I'll be talking to Mitch Horowitz, the wonderful Mitch Horowitz. He's coming back. And then Joseph Emmett, the author, after that on the 22nd. And I think probably the week of the 29th before – well, before December, we'll be doing another Fearless Writing class. Until then, everybody, go out there, do what you love, and just keep being awesome.